Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World, episode 129. I'm your host, John Jordan, and very pleased joining me again for the fourth time, as we've just discussed, is Jeff from Sky Mavis. How's it going, Jeff?
Yeah, going well. Thanks for having me here for the fourth time. I thought that it was fifth or sixth, but yeah, we'll have to get there next time.
Yeah. You're all pegged up now. You got the Lego one. That's good. T-shirt. Plenty to talk about now. The gap between your what we think is your third and your fourth episode is much shorter than the gap between your third and your second episode. And I think that just goes to show how busy you guys have been in recent months. So we're going to a lot to talk about. I guess we're particularly talking about Ronin as the, you know, sort of not so much coming of age, but certainly sort of starting to blossom as a you know, blockchain gaming infrastructure, which is more than just the thing that Axie Infinity runs on, it becoming a sort of, you know, a more generalized blockchain. So do you want to kind of fill us in on what the headlines have been over the last sort of couple of weeks in terms of where Ronin is now?
Sure. So it's been a really exciting time for everyone in the community and the ecosystem. So last Thursday we had a major announcement where we put out two things that the community have been really excited for. So one, we delivered on RON staking and the upgrade to DPoS, which is really allowing Ronin to become this first chain that's really built by gamers for gamers and now owned and secured by gamers. At the same time, we also announced this first batch of game studios that are building on Ronin. And I think most notably, they included game studios that are building outside of the Axie IP, right? So for a long time, right, Sky Mavis, Ronin, Axie, these are kind of all synonymous with each other. And now we're starting to see Ronin blossom into, right, this kind of Web3 gaming chain, this Web3 gaming launchpad, right? The number one place, theoretically, to launch and grow your Web3 game. So that would, you know, that's the recent news. And I think that the reaction from the space, from the community, it's been awesome so far.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll talk about the games and that sort of stuff. Later. Let's stick with the maybe the more slightly technical stuff. So for the I guess it's about a year now, maybe even over a year. But so Ronin has been the sort of the blockchain that you guys basically built when you realized a long time ago you couldn't run on the Ethereum mainnet, and you tried, you know, some L2s back in the day that they didn't work out either. So you made the decision, you know, a long time ago to come up with Ronin. And that was, I guess, for a long time, what we call a proof of authority, sort of centralized blockchain. And gradually you've been decentralizing that out. And I guess this point now is sort of the end point of that initial stage where you have a whole bunch of validators. So it's not just Sky Mavis, although clearly Sky Mavis is a kind of key component in that validator set, but there's a whole bunch of other sort of companies who are just validating, you know, running nodes that make the blockchain work. And now anyone with the RON token can now go and stake that token with a validator and then sort of start to, you know, secure the ecosystem and earn sort of, you know, the typical staking rewards you get on a delegated proof of stake blockchain. So I guess to some degree, it's for people not in the space, that seems like sort of quite a technical and small sort of feature. But actually, I think for those of us in the sort of the game space, that's actually the sort of, as you say, the first part where people are actually, you know, being part of securing how this whole thing works. And I guess we've seen that more broadly with, you know, Ethereum becoming a proof of stake sort of blockchain and all that sort of stuff as well. So how hard is that to do technically? And so, you know, what does that open you up in the future to sort of start doing?
Sure. So it was definitely a feat of engineering and product design to write the thing that we really nailed and wanted to make sure we executed on was making this a very simple and intuitive user experience, right? Because many of the players and many of the holders of the RON token and the stakers, they're gamers, right? Axie was the first thing for around 50% of our player base. It was their first thing that they ever did in Web3. And now they're going from, you know, being a holder and owner of this RON token, which they're able to actually earn by using in-game resources to farm, which I think is also really special. So they, you know, many of our many are quite new, and then so we wanted to make this a very intuitive experience, right? So, and I think the team has really, really delivered on that. You know, I think like one of the things is that one of the points I want to make is that, right, like we don't see the infrastructure, to be honest, as being a huge differentiator in the space, right? Actually, like, you know, there are a lot of proof of stake blockchains, and there are a lot of even like proof of stake gaming chains. But this was, you know, nevertheless, it was a big moment for our community, I think, because of the ownership, right? Because of the people securing this network are also the gamers using it. And I think that's quite a unique set of circumstances that we were able to create by the way that we launched and rolled out the RON token.
Yeah. I have to say, on a very sort of personal level, I was just sort of messing around with it. And it was just sort of really nice to see sort of Coco Bear, who's like well known in the community, is like probably the first called Axie Whale, you know, a really sort of, you know, I don't know them at all, but you just, you know, follow Coco Bear on Twitter, and then Coco Bear was like a validator. So like, oh, I'll stake some RON, you know, to Coco Bear, because why wouldn't you? Why would, you know?
Yeah, that's, I think like nice. That's part of the beauty, right? Is if you go to, you know, the staking dashboard right now, I have it pulled up, and you see that, you know, Coco Bear actually has more RON delegated to him than Sky Mavis does, right? And I think that's the beauty. That's the power of this technology really demonstrating itself just by that simple fact.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, just on a, I guess a more broader point, as you sort of mentioned as well, it is an interesting time where we are starting to see. I mean, there's a whole bunch of, you know, I guess there's been a reinvigoration of sort of technology like Polygon, which is now, you know, rolling out sort of new tech. And we're also seeing sort of blockchains like Oasis out of Japan and the Mythos blockchain, and all sort of, it is quite interesting that for a long time we sort of had games running on the general purpose sort of blockchains that are out there. And now it seems that there's sort of, you know, maybe it's just because the maturity generally in the market or there's a lot of games out there now. It is interesting that there are a lot of blockchains that are sort of positioning themselves as, we are going to be there for games, which I think is a, you know, generally a positive thing for the entire space. I guess there's always a competitive element in there, but more generally, I think, you know, it's always interesting when people are sort of growing the pie bigger and realizing that, you know, that there's a lot more, you know, obviously vast amounts of activity outside of blockchain games than there is sort of, you know, competing within blockchain games. So I think that's sort of quite a nice thing for the sort of sector, that there's quite a lot of sort of similar moves from sort of, you know, broadly similar companies who are thinking, yeah, you know, sort of this buy gamers for gamers, get involved, and some people will prefer different blockchains for whatever, you know, reason of geographical reasons or whatever. But I think that's quite a nice thing for the space.
Definitely. I mean, it means that, you know, there's a market that's developing, I think. If there's competition, that will mean that there's a market. We're definitely starting to see that, and we're starting to see that, hey, like there are community members now entering the RONIN ecosystem that are like, you know, they see themselves as part of a bunch of different ecosystems and are interested in, for example, making content and owning assets through a bunch of different angles, right? So, it's been really interesting, and I think like the fact that now it's like people can see that this isn't just about Axie. So just because Axie might not be the IP or the type of game for you, doesn't mean that there isn't a way to get involved in this movement. And I think that's become a lot more tangible now that we're starting to see these other types of titles come onto the platform.
Yeah. And I guess more generally from I'm not sure really for RONIN so much at the moment, but you'd imagine over time there will be people who would just like, you know, we are infrastructure providers for game systems, and we are provided validators for a whole bunch of game blockchains. And that's sort of good from a sort of bottom up sort of situation as well. But let's talk a little bit more, you know, as you sort of said there, you know, up to this point, sort of RONIN has been very tied to Sky Mavis, which is very tied to Axie Infinity, which is still obviously a massive thing, and you're very focused on it, and loads going on in terms of that product, which we won't talk about in this podcast. But I guess the other sort of interesting news that was came about at the same time as sort of the RONIN staking stuff is the first five developers that are making sort of third-party games that are going to be running on the Ronin blockchain. Some of them are sort of Axie themed, but most of them aren't. So was that something when, I mean, I guess, you know, you made Ronin because you had the need to make something for Axie Infinity to run off of. I mean, that was the key thing. But how quickly, you know, did you decide we want this to be, you know, at some point this has to be an open ecosystem that other games have nothing to do with Axie and nothing to do with that sort of gameplay, attracted an audience who wouldn't ever play Axie Infinity? You know, was that something that came very naturally, or was that something that you sort of, you know, had to sort of think about?
I think we knew quite early on, you know, let's say 2019, that there was a massive opportunity in the market. And why? Because we were out there looking for solutions, and there wasn't anything that really fit us. And there wasn't anything that was really built by people who understood the needs specifically for gamers and for building a game. So we thought, hey, like, you know, if we're going to make this for ourselves, you know, it would probably help grow the space and grow everything that we're doing if we can use this to supercharge the entire ecosystem as a whole, and to make this available for the most thoughtfully crafted Web3 games out there. So, I guess, just a quick story, right? Like, we launched in 2018, and, you know, it was like, okay, scaling Ethereum, that was a major thing on our mind, because we were from the CryptoKitties community and had seen how, it just wasn't working to have majority of the transactions happening on the base layer. So we looked at some different solutions. We actually used Loom Network a bit.
I was there on Loom. I was staked on Loom.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the vision actually for Loom was quite good. I think they were just too early. And so when they kind of just gave up, it was like, okay, like, you know, let's continue building in that path and maybe, you know, do it with a little bit more determination.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever think about, because obviously, you know, companies at that sort of time went through a similar thing. So I guess most sort of famously, you know, Dapper Labs were running CryptoKitties, as you said, and they came up with the Flow blockchain. I mean, presumably, would you have had conversations with them? I mean, I'm sure they would have wanted you to go on the Flow blockchain, which is, you know, people are running stuff on the Flow blockchain. But can you not comment?
Yeah, I mean, we thought that there would be something that's, you know, specifically made for gamers, for the gaming use case. And we felt like, you know, at the time that it was also like, we don't want to trust someone else, right? Like, we were done trusting someone else. And that's why we called it Ronin, right? It's like, a Ronin is a samurai without a master. We wanted to take the destiny of our products into our own hands. So it was like really making sure that, you know, we needed Axie to survive. We needed Axie to actually work. At the beginning, with the level of progress in the infrastructure, you know, at that time, we felt like, okay, like, you know, we have to make sure that what happened with Loom doesn't happen to us again. So.
Yeah. Okay. So at some point you've decided that, you know, the Ronin network's going to be opened up. There's going to be other games on there. Obviously there's, you know, thousands, or not quite thousands, but hundreds of games being developed. On various blockchains, you know, with developers of various sort of expertise, to put it politely, I suppose. How do you decide, you know, which ones you sort of want? You know, it's sort of interesting. You've got a sort of mix. I think there's, of the five, I think three are mobile games. I think maybe two PC games. Could be wrong on that. But there's a, you know, and you've sort of got a, you know, on a, because you have some mobile games, you have some sort of more mobile focused genres, like some match three sort of stuff going on there. Did you sort of sit down with a slate and go, right, we want like an action PC game and like a match three mobile game and a sports game, and, or, you know, how do you go about sort of creating, you know, obviously this is only the first selection, the first wave of games you've announced. I'm sure there's other stuff to come, but how do you go around sort of just acquiring and talking to developers and say, come on, Ronin, and how does that process work?
Sure. I mean, I think there are a couple of different categories or verticals, right? It's like obviously in terms of platform and hardware, you know, I think we do have a bias towards mobile because we feel like Web3 is going to be most powerful in emerging markets, and emerging market strategy works best when you have a mobile bias. And then in terms of genres, right, it's like, okay, you know, we can look at like, you know, what is working well, what is working quite well on mobile, you know, so that does include, you know, things like sports games and mid-core RPG, for example. But then I think also it's like, okay, what type of game benefits most from in-game assets, right? So there are more, there are certain games that are more community-centric, that are more social, and that have longer lifespans, right? It's like, of course, you know, you would want to own an NFT in a game with a longer lifespan, right? Because if the genre is naturally something that has a shorter lifespan, actually owning something in the game might not be as impactful. So I think you know that's but they're all hypotheses, right? For now, you know, I think one of the reason, you know, it's like, we have hypotheses as well on, you know, why Axie worked, right? It was like, you know, very strong community, a product that catered to community, really strong art, which catered to collectability. And then also, right, this kind of this idea that this would be something that is almost operated for as long as possible, right? So this type of a game an immortal, you know, so some sort of an immortal type of game, an immortal type of IP. I think there's also, you know, the IP component, right? Is like, is this an IP or a brand that can attract a fervent community and inspire collectability and that type of kind of emotion, because I think like that's one of the things, right, that I think we've attempted to bring, and that's when we're executing well and really at our best, I think it's because we're bringing emotion into Web3, whereas right before NFTs it was all about calculation and you know, money, store value, right? And that's not what we liked about Web3, right? As gamers, we got interested in Web3 and crypto when it had to do with gaming and collecting, and that was, you know, that was part of our experience into the space.
Okay. In terms of the products announced, I guess the one that really jumped out at me was the Indian cricket game. Which maybe because I just don't know your audience as well as you guys do, but obviously, you know, sports games are big generally, mobile sports games are big, but you know, in India it literally is cricket or, you know, or nothing. So I mean, is that something, because I got the impression that people in India played Axie, but it wasn't sort of maybe one of your key markets. So is that something that you think is a bit of an opportunity to sort of push into a market which sort of, you know, is quite into sort of crypto in general? I hear a lot of stuff about that, and obviously loves cricket. There's loads of mobile cricket games out there. There's loads of fantasy sports stuff around that. So you feel that's like a good opportunity to find some sort of, you know, whatever the term is, some sort of blue sea opportunity.
Yeah, I think you're onto it, right? It's like we see India as a market that is ripe for Web3 adoption. And we also see that it's a young country with 500 million gamers in it. And if we can get a tiny percentage of that market and onboard them into our ecosystem, then, you know, that's something that could really move the needle. It's definitely not something where we're like, hey, we have a bunch of players in India that are going to really love this cricket play. No. Like we definitely, you know, looking to grow in India, and, you know, we have seen some pockets of activity in India, but, you know, it really is, you know, as you said, I think blue sky or blue ocean. So.
Yeah, blue ocean. That's the one I was off there. And I guess it's interesting that again, one of the, just because I've chatted to them recently, so it's sort of on my mind, I was talking to sort of the Indie GG guys who have some very, you know, ambitious targets for what they're going to do with sort of, you know, guild gaming in India. So I think it sort of plays more generally. I think that's, to me, that jumped out because I thought that's a really sort of good opportunity there, where everyone knows the, you know, if you can, I think you can get the right product into the Indian market, then you're, you know, the company that does that is going to do very well, because there clearly is a very educated and interested market in that sort of thing. So yeah, interesting. I'll be, yeah, not that I'm a big cricket mobile gaming fan, but I'll have to check that one out. I was also keen to see, because I've known them for a long time, is Battle Bears is back again. Again, that, I guess that was one that not necessarily surprised to see, because I know they've been working on Web3 stuff, but I guess I was pleased to see that they were a game, because it's a very, it sort of looks quite cute, because it's sort of like cute bears, obviously, Battle Bears, but it has that sort of mid-core sort of shooting element, which worked very well on mobile, free-to-play mobile back in the day. And I'll be very interested to see how that sort of plays out for Web3, because I think that's a very, potentially a very sort of open sort of audience. Yeah, I think a lot of people could just play that game and really sort of like it. And
we like those types of games. You know, we built Axie Classic, it kind of coincided with the launch of Brawl Stars, or maybe like the beta, right? So I remember playing Brawl Stars a bunch in our first office, you know, the studio apartment. So, you know, that's the type of game that we really like. And, you know, obviously it's very mobile centric, and we love the, Ben, the founder, and, he's in very community centric, and, you know, the art and the IP seems interesting. And it was, lo and behold, many of our community members were actually saying, hey, like, I played this as a kid. And I think that was really special for them to see kind of that indie type game developer that, you know, they actually had some experience with coming onto the platform. I think that made it real for some of our community members. So.
But I guess you've already mentioned, I suppose, not necessarily to single out any one of those games, but I guess the game that sort of more traditional gamers would sort of go, oh, that looks interesting, is the Machines Arena, which is like a sort of top-down, team-based, sort of has MOBA elements in there as well, from Directive Games, sort of, quite well-known developer, been around for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years now. So did you feel like you needed that sort of like a signature game, or sort of, I don't know, what people call it, a tempo game or something like that? Did you feel that was important to get one of those in there? And how do you think?
Well, when we saw it, we were excited. We're like, hey, this is something that is, there's been a lot of time and effort put into it already, and it's something that the community can start to sink their teeth into quite soon, which I think, added added some meat to the announcement. So Machines Arena, I think the reaction to it has been incredible. I kind of, people are describing it as kind of a top-down Overwatch. The matches are quite snappy, right? 4 to 5 minutes. So perfect for, when it's eventually ported over to mobile. They've also have a built-in spectator mode, so great for content creators, right? And so our creators have been really excited about it as well. The team has been meeting our community. Kent, the chief product officer, is doing his kind of round of Twitter spaces and joining the streams. And the response to it has been really great. And we have seen people who in the past have maybe turned their nose up a little bit at the Ronin ecosystem, like, oh, that's just Axie. That's not for me. Starting to get into, taking a look at this game and starting to give our ecosystem another look. I think that's been, it's been really amazing to see the response from the community.
And with this sort of first batch announced, what's your sort of gut feeling on, by the end of sort of 2023, so, what are we now, sort of 9 months from now, do you want this situation where, is obviously you will always probably have a quality filter on there, but, is it always, why wouldn't we have more games than fewer games? Or do you want to, for the next few years, you think it'd be quite a curated sort of process where you go, well, we want to make sure what we let onto this blockchain? Because there's I guess it's arguments for either. Obviously the more you let on, the sort of the lower the quality, but then you might have some sort of like breakout hit stuff, that the curating people didn't necessarily see. How does that play out, do you think?
Our approach is perhaps a bit more white glove service, curated, especially at the beginning. Yeah. And this is also how Steam started, where in the beginning, you kind of had to know someone to get on. And then they opened it up over time as they learned more and as the community and user base grew to be able to sustain and support a larger ecosystem. So I think that is our approach. I think it's quite unique, and I think it is one of the unique selling points of building on Ronin, in that it's not just like you know, you have to, you know, we're working quite closely with the initial partners. And I think that's something that they really appreciate, because, you know, if you're going to be working with a new type of game developer that's coming into Web3, they are going to need some help and some handholding related to tokenomics, the community, and, you know, how to integrate with Web3. These are things that need to be done very carefully. They're things that we can provide a lot of expertise with. You know, it's I think, like, especially during these early stages, we prefer to have a bit of a rollout that is, but long term though, you know, we do want to, you know, be more aggressive and open it up to more types of games, but, you know, that will also happen as the market grows as well.
I guess there's sort of an organic process into that. In the beginning, you sort of, you want to make sure that the stuff's going out there is, the community is going to be, you know, some of the community is going to really enjoy. And as the community grows, and there's, I guess, more sort of pockets of interest in various things that could not be now be more niche in a year's time, might have a, you know, they might still be niche, but there might be a bigger niche audience in there. And how does this sort of play outside of the blockchain? You know, obviously you've, you know, Actinfinity Classic, as it was then, you know, basically became a phenomenon as being an APK, and you've, for the last year, you've probably been dealing with app stores to work out how you get the version through the app stores. And but does this sort of stuff allow you to roll, you know, roll out the ability to sort of Rodin or Sky Mavis to become a bit more of a sort of distribution sort of play?
Yeah, so I think what we're starting to see Rodin become is, right, this sort of a launch pad or this distribution platform for the most promising and thoughtful Web3 games. And we're asking a lot of questions around, you know, what does a Web3 publishing model look like, right? I don't think it's going to perfectly correspond to, you know, what's worked in mobile free-to-play, for example, right? I think with every new paradigm shift in gaming, you have new distribution models that arise. And, you know, Web3 gaming will also need require a kind of similar reappraisal of the go-to-market strategies. And I think, you know, a fair assumption is that it will involve community and leveraging community to be your, you know, evangelist and to be, you know, this kind of viral referral partner. I think that is something that we're starting to see. And, you know, with the game studio partners that are initially launching or announcing on Rodin, you know, I think they've been really excited to see, you know, how much the community already sees them as part of this family, a part of this ecosystem. And it is, I think, through the aligned incentives and the fact that, you know, they have this loyalty to the Rodin blockchain, you know, because of their experience and because of the assets that they own, and that they're kind of like welcoming them into this powerful ecosystem. And I think that's a really powerful, I think that's a feeling that, it, you know, you can't really find in traditional gaming. And I think that whatever the Web3 publishing model ends up being, it will leverage that kind of relationship between the platform and the protocol and the games and the products on it.
And I think that's a very good way of putting it, because I guess the good timing for that sort of model, however messy it is the existing sort of certainly for a free-to-play mobile model, where you had very clean UA sausage machine where you basically could go through Facebook and Google and
That doesn't work for Web3 gaming yet, right? It doesn't even work for them, right? It's starting to not work. Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing that 2 years ago, everyone had this like brilliantly poised machine, and everyone knew how it worked. You pumped money into it, and you basically got community out the other end, or not community, you got downloads out the other end, and that's just totally broken now. So it's actually quite an interesting time for this sort of, you know, I don't know what we call it. I guess it, to a degree, as you say, is sort of publishing, but it's publishing is almost sort of the wrong word. It's almost like publishing / community. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, also, and I have spoken to kind of Southeast Asian game publishers as well, and they're saying, like, you know, and what I've learned from them is that, you know, their model of publishing and distribution has been very, you know, community centric and kind of guerrilla marketing for a while now, right? Like involving, you know, oh, like how do you sell Free Fire to people who don't have mobile payment, right? So it's like, you know, needing to go and actually get like these payment cards out into the farmlands and stuff like that. That's stuff that I think Southeast Asian game publishers are kind of used to doing. And then I think that is maybe more becoming like perhaps, you know, what the publishing model will look like for, you know, maybe all of gaming or maybe specifically very much related to Web3. So it's something that we're doing research. I'm doing research into it with my team. And I think we're learning, but these are not solved problems. If they were solved, then we would have Web3 games with, hundreds of millions of users, right? So that's the opportunity.
That's the goal for the next couple of years. Good. Always good to leave everyone on a interesting opportunity, which is where we are. Thank you so much, Jeff. That was brilliant as ever.
Awesome. No, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. And love to stop by again.
You're very keen for some reason to get up to appearing 6 times on the podcast. I don't know why. Yeah,
I want to go for the record. I need to go for the record. I'm quite competitive. So I was just we were just at GDC, right? And then I was reminiscing about how we met at, I guess, in 2018 San Francisco, I guess around GDC. Yeah. I didn't know. I joked that I didn't even know what GDC was and that I was at GDC that year. I was just like, oh, I'm going to San Francisco because somehow I got invited to this blockchain gaming event. Yeah.
And the reminiscence there is you won the blockchain gamer.biz indie pitch award. You were the first winner of the indie pitch there. So there was we were good at sorting talent, discovering talent back in the day.
Yeah, no, that was really fun. It was kind of a pivotal moment, at least for me, where I felt like I went from being a community member to someone who was doing legitimate things to help the organization or to help the project at that time.
So. Cool. Thank you, Jeff, and thank you to you guys for watching, listening, however you consume the podcast, the YouTube channel, whatever. Please subscribe. So every episode we are talking to people who are building out this interesting, new, uncertain, brilliant world of gaming community. It's a whole new thing. We've not seen it before. There are some things, I guess, that we can sort of draw on from the past about what good games are and a whole bunch of other new stuff, which is entirely new. And that's what makes it exciting. So please come back, see what's going on next time in the world of blockchain gaming world. See ya.